You're listening to the Pastor Writer Podcast, episode 15. In today's podcast, I'm joined by editor and author Drew Dick. Drew has extensive knowledge across the entire spectrum of the publishing industry, from an acquisitions editor to a magazine editor to an author himself. I think you'll enjoy this conversation because he not only has great perspective on the publishing industry, he offers some really strong advice for new authors. Hope you enjoy this conversation. Well, it's my privilege to have on the podcast today, Drew Dick. Drew is an acquisitions editor at Moody Publishing and a senior editor at ctpastors.com. It's Christianity Today's publication for church leaders. And though he works with a lot of authors within those roles, he's an author himself. Books maybe you're familiar with, Generation Ex-Christian, Why Young Adults Are Leaving the Church and How to Bring Them Back. And one that I particularly love, it's on my shelf, is Yawning at Tigers, You Can't Tame God, So Stop Trying. You may have seen Drew's name come through some of his work in places like USA Today, CNN, Huffington Post, of course, Christianity Today and Relevant Magazine. And he's also a resident of Portland, Oregon, which we're going to have to talk about that in a second. So, Drew, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited about this.
So maybe this is, I forget the name for the term, but there's a term where when something's on your mind, you just start seeing it everywhere you come across it. But it seems like everyone I talk to these days is from Portland. So people who have listened to podcasts will know Mick Silva, the editor. And I just saw this week that the guys behind the Gospel Project, the YouTube videos, which are excellent, that those guys have their office in Portland.
Bible Project.
Or the Bible Project. Yeah. And then you're in Portland. So it seems like a lot of good things going on in Portland.
Yes, although I have to make a confession, because I actually live in Vancouver, Washington, which is like 10 minutes from Portland, but it's the uncool side. So I lived about a year and a half ago. I moved from Portland to Vancouver because the houses are cheaper anyway.
Yeah.
I lost a lot of hipster cred right there.
Well, it seems like a great place. My wife and I have a 10-year anniversary coming up, and I have to admit, all this Portland talk, maybe a trip to the West Coast, maybe something.
Come on out, man.
Not been to that part of the country. So.
Yeah, we'll go to Powell's Books.
I'm up for it.
Man, for real.
Well, it's an honor to have you on the podcast today. I'm excited to get into some of these topics just because there's so much about what you do that I think people will find interesting. And really, you do it in so many different roles, both as an editor, working acquisitions, writing your own. So we'll make sure we get into that. But maybe we could start you talking a little bit about your work with Moody Publishers. So what does it mean to be an acquisitions editor at Moody Publishers?
Yeah, it's actually something I'm still figuring out. I'm pretty new to the role. I've been just over 2 years in this role at Moody, and it's been awesome. My first brushes with the publishing industry were as an author, right? And so I kind of got little peeks at the process. You know, you put together the proposal and submit it, and then you talk to marketers and designers at various points in the process. But it's been really eye-opening to kind of be on the other side of the curtain and see how the sausage is made, so to speak. I've really enjoyed it. It's very similar to the work I did for years at Leadership Journal at Christianity Today, which was working with pastors to get articles from them. Now I'm just doing that, getting books from pastors, mainly from pastors. My beat at Moody is church leaders. So I'm looking for books that will equip, inspire church leaders in their calling. And so usually the authors that I'm finding are also pastors, which makes sense, right? And so it's been awesome just to, you know, work with folks that maybe have an idea, help them refine that a little bit, think of how we can best position it, and then, of course, shape up a proposal and a manuscript eventually.
Yeah, in some of our past conversations, we've talked with an agent a little bit about the details of that process, about putting together a proposal, what that looks like when it goes to an acquisitions editor. I'm curious, from the seat you sat in that portion of your job, you're probably fielding, you could probably give us a number, a lot of these proposals throughout the year that are coming into you from agents, from authors. What does that process look like for you specifically, receiving these proposals and trying to sort through so many, what are probably so many good projects, to find those few that you're going to pick up and begin to work with throughout the process of taking them all the way through to print?
Yeah, it is. It is a challenge. I mean, I don't know if I get as many proposals as people might think. I joke that, you know, I've had a lot of friends and contacts that go, "Hey, Drew, I want to write a book." I'm like, "Hey, cool. Let's put together a proposal for me, and maybe I'll send them a template of some kind of a proposal. What it look like?" And then I don't hear from them ever again. So, and I get it, right? Because I understand I've put together some proposals myself. Yeah. And it's a daunting sort of undertaking. So I joke that sometimes the quickest way to get rid of someone is to ask for a proposal. But at the same time, yeah, of course, I do, you know, get a lot of people pinging me about, hey, I have an idea for a book, or I'd like to do this, or sending in proposals. I get some through agents as well, of course. And so, man, it's different every time. There are a few things to think about, right? First of all, you're thinking, okay, who is this person, right? And that doesn't mean, or are they, you know, a famous pastor with a huge church. It's just, you know, what kind of tribe within evangelicalism are they part of? What's kind of their theology, their flavor, the topic that they like to address. And then you want to ask, well, is this a good topic? Is this something that people are clamoring for? Right. And then there's the execution question. Okay. Can this person, actually write well, express themselves well on, you know, on a page? And, you know, with pastors, it's hit and miss. It's kind of tough because, as you know, spoken communication or preaching is a very different animal than writing, right?
Yeah.
And people that are great preachers, and this continually surprises me, the amazing communicators from the pulpit, when it comes to writing, they really struggle. And the reverse is true as well. I've heard a lot of writers speak, and I go, man, that was terrible. they're great, great writers, but somehow that doesn't translate into the way they speak. And so, yeah, I mean, and to some degree, of course, people like me are there to help people wrestle their thoughts into coherent sentences and books, ultimately, but they have to have a modicum of ability to do that as well.
Well, I've talked about that on the podcast before, because I know it's true of me, and I hear it from a lot of the pastors I have on that are also authors, is that it is not a one-to-one correlation, that right. It's not as simple as, oh, I preached some really good sermons, I'm going to write those up, and now I've got a book out of them, that learning to write, learning even just this process of getting published, it is a craft, a skill in and of itself to be developed.
So true. Yeah, and there's a steep learning curve, and that's why just immersing yourself in great writing is so important. Looking at the folks that you admire, I'm not talking about, like, you know, go read Shakespeare, although that's good too, but the pastor writers that you admire, kind of getting a hold of their books and not trying to rip them off or anything. But if you immerse yourself in the books that have really been effective in reaching you, then you will start to emulate some of the patterns and style that you're reading.
For you, a lot of that, as you mentioned before, came out of your own experience with writing versus, hey, I got this job working for a publisher, now I'm interested in writing. You kind of did it the other way around. I've been writing books, I've had some success there, and out of that comes an interest in the publishing process. How for you early on did you know that you wanted to write, and how did that calling begin to sort of show up and then process itself out to the point today? I know you've got a couple published and others that are in the works.
Yeah, well, God spoke to me in a dream. No.
and you wrote perfect sentences from that next morning on, right?
That's right. So, yeah. Yeah. And he started dictating. right. No, not quite. So, I mean, my first kind of inklings that I wanted to try to be a writer were, like, in my late teens. I started reading Max Lucado and some Ravi Zacharias and, anyway, some Christian books. And it just really impacted me. You know, I was like, wow, this inspired me. It shaped my faith. And automatically, almost, I'm like, I want to do this for other people. So I started churning out these rather sappy devotionals that were kind of poor man's versions of Max Lucado articles, and sending them to denominational magazines. I grew up in Canada, so magazines up there, and was lucky enough to get a couple published, and that was really encouraging. Remember getting that first $50 check in the mail. I was like, are you kidding me? This someone's actually going to pay
dream,
me.
The dream, right?
Right. I was living the dream, man. Of course, I was living in my parents' basement. But, yeah, that was kind of the first part of it. And I just kind of had these vague aspirations to write in some way and to learn about God. And so that ended up with me going to seminary, getting an English degree, going to seminary. And I really kind of stumbled into the editor thing, which I've really enjoyed. But I'm in this kind of unique position where I burn the candle at both ends as far as being an author and being an editor. Being an editor, as far as how it breaks down with my work hours, is definitely the majority of it. But I really do enjoy that outlet of being able to write articles periodically, write books. which is far harder now that I got a whole bunch of kids.
I got two. How old are your kids? I saw the picture on your bio.
Yeah, I've got a 6-year-old boy and an almost 4-year-old girl, and I got one on the way.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Crazy. Well, thank you. Yes, and I'm a little stressed out because I'm 40, okay? And and so I'm doing the math, and this kid's, you know, by the time this kid's in high school, I'm going to be about 97. And
that
so,
just keeps you young. It just keeps you young.
So, there, yeah. There you go. Yes. And tired.
Well, probably the case as well. So you've got the job acquiring books, you're writing books, and then the third kind of component of this is the ongoing work you've done in the past and then even today with Christianity Today. Maybe you could explain a little bit of your role there with Christianity Today pastors.
Yeah. Well, I used to be, you know, for years, what, 7-8 years, I was full-time at Christianity Today, lived out in the Chicago area. A great experience. I edited, I was the managing editor of Leadership Journal, which was our publication for pastors. Unfortunately, Leadership Journal is no longer around. It's just kind of a victim of the trend with print publishing. But there is an online version of it now called ctpastors.com. Highly recommend it. And I really enjoy still having a role there, even though it's kind of a small role. I write a couple of newsletters for them and give feedback on articles and edit articles once in a while. And so, yeah, that's enjoyable. And it's in the emphasis there is very practical. It's like, okay, nuts and bolts for pastors. How can they be more effective and faithful in their callings? And so, yeah, there's a lot of crossover, of course, what I do at Moody, you know, working with pastors to shape up book ideas, and what I do still for CT pastors, and that is helping pastors write articles to other pastors that will be helpful for them.
When most people think about writing, I think they jump to the conclusion of, I want to be a writer, therefore I want to write books. But you work with a lot of pastors, a lot of writers who are ongoing producing article content, devotional content, as you sort of mentioned before. What role do you think that opportunity plays for people who are trying to become a writer? Maybe opportunities they have to write for denominational newsletters or devotionals or online periodicals like Christianity Today for pastors. This potential for article writing that maybe we don't often think about as much.
Yeah, and that's a great question. And I'm always surprised people go, I want to write a book. And I'm like, okay, what have you written before? Well, nothing. And I think, man, that can happen, right? Where you just jump straight to writing a book. Mm-hmm. But that's starting in the deep end, right? It's like you've never taken swimming lessons and you want to go swim in the ocean. So, my advice is always, well, listen, you know, write, maybe blog a little bit, write for some of these online publications because, I mean, the internet's a beast, right? So everyone who's got these websites, whether it's Christianity Today or other publications, it has to be fed. And so they're constantly looking for fresh, excellent content. So there are a lot of opportunities out there. And that gives you an ability to do a couple things. Of course, you can hone your craft, you get better at writing. And then secondly, it's a way to field test ideas that you have, right? So if you think you've got the next best idea for a book, well, that's great. It may be true or maybe not, but if you write an article based on that idea and it goes crazy and it gets like 100,000 views or something like that, then, well, maybe that's a pretty good indication that you're onto something, and then you can explore it in maybe book length format. So yeah, I highly recommend that. If you really want to be a writer, definitely writing posts and articles, even online, is a great way to go.
One of the things we've talked about on the podcast before is when you feel this call to write, I think one of the things that can sort of unconsciously sneak in is this image of a writer. So really what I'm finding myself interested in is not so much the actual writing itself. This may be your example about people not actually giving you the proposal after they said they wanted to. What I really want is I want to be a writer. I want to feel like a writer. I want to have this image or this idea of being a writer, and books are so often associated with that. And so I do think you're right. I think there can even be this sort of opportunity to test out that calling through writing articles, through blogging, just being able to sort of really come to terms with what is it God is asking you to do and what are really the reasons that you're interested in doing it. Because sometimes they can be more complicated than we think.
Man, that's so true. And you know what? It's funny. I think there are so many people that want to have a book, but they don't want to write a book. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They kind of want to use it as a resume or CV builder, or have it for a little bit of ego. And listen, we all have, you know, complicated motivations when it comes to writing. Sure. But they're less interested in actually doing the hard work of refining an idea, putting together a proposal, editing chapters over and over again to get them in shape. You know, that kind of hard work that it takes in order to actually produce a book, and a book that people will read and that's decent, right? And so that weeds out a lot of people, because I think a lot of people just are in love with the idea of being an author. And of course, then there's the other side of it. It's funny. People have all kinds of romantic fantasies about what it is to be a writer. It's like, you know, they picture you out in a cabin in the woods, churning out masterpieces, when of course, for the vast majority of us, it's a sort of sideline where, you know, you got life all around you and you're doing it when you can. It's kind of a side hustle scenario. And I know for me, I'm trying to write and kids are running into my office, and, you know, I mean, but if you love it, you stick with it. And in the end, I do believe it's worth it.
Well, and you're a good example of that. I mean, you've got two books published here that are pretty well known. I mean, like I mentioned before, really enjoyed Yawning at Tigers, and know a lot of people who have read it. But still, you're not retired on a beach somewhere working on the next book. You've got we're talking about the three jobs that you currently do. So I think you're right. Like, at some point, there has to be a deep passion for the act of doing it, right? The marathon of running this thing to completion. Because if it's just about the final moment, I just don't think there's enough in the final moment to sustain the amount of work that goes into the process if you don't just learn to enjoy the process itself as well.
Right. And also, I mean, at the same time, it's not journaling, right? If you just want to journal, that's something just for yourself. And so you do have in mind, of course, the impact that the book ultimately is going to have. And I think that's important. But you do have to control, I think, your expectations. I remember a good conversation I had with my wife early on when I published my first book back in, 2010, the Generation X Christian one. And like, it was out for a year, and I was like, of course, every author, especially first-time authors, you're kind of hoping, oh, this is going to be like bestseller, Oprah's going to call, I don't know. And I remember looking at the sales numbers, and at that point it had sold 5,000, right? And I was all bummed out, and I'm like, oh, it's a failure. You know, and I remember my wife's like, you know, what are you talking about? This is like 5,000 people potentially that have read or been impacted by this book. And you're turning up your nose at that. Like, isn't that worth it? And of course it is, right? I mean, and that's no runaway success for a book, obviously. But at the same time, I had to look at that and go, yeah, you know, kind of repent of my pride and arrogance and go, God, if you want to use this book to reach 5,000 people, man, I'm honored. I'm psyched about that. And so that was a good sort of reality check for me.
Well, and probably makes you all the better writer coming back to book two, which there was in your case as well. It wasn't the end of the road, right? But now realizing, right, okay, if I'm going to take on this second project, I know a little bit more about what is in my heart and why I'm doing it and what the real motives are beneath me. That can be a real valuable learning process to go through.
Right. Yeah. And for that second book, I was like, I'm not even going to try to write something that's marketable. I'm going to write a book about God's holiness. You know, I mean,
yeah. Like, for young people, right? Yeah. Millennials. Right? So, yeah.
And when people would ask me, you know, oh, what's your book about? And then I'd go into some rambling, terrible speech that would make their eyes glaze over. And I had no great elevator pitch, but I was like, yeah, I'm just going to write about something that's on my heart. Whether that's a good decision or not, who knows? But
well, I'd be curious to hear how you would articulate this. But as I kind of look at your work and think about what you do at Moody, but also at Christianity Today, it seems like one of the sort of core convictions for you is engagement with what's happening in culture. So whether that's secular culture around us through, I know you speak to the issue of millennials and faith quite a bit, or whether it's even within the church culture, trends that are happening. I notice a lot of your work gives voice to what's happening, but also engages with what's happening. I'm curious if you see that as true of your own work, or how you understand that playing out in the editing as well as the writing that you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I hadn't thought about it like that, but I think you're right. I mean, often for me, the motivation to write on a topic comes from, a couple of things. Looking around the culture, whether it's the broader culture or usually actually the church culture, and go, hey, there's something missing here or something that I'm concerned about. And then secondly, I write often out of my own kind of pain points, right? Like, so if there's an area of my Christian walk where I'm feeling frustrated and stymied, that's going to cause me to maybe address that topic. With the first book that I wrote about, you know, 20 somethings leaving the faith, part of that was motivated by being a youth pastor in my early 20s and then looking up, these kids that I had been a youth pastor to 10 years later and seen that like half of them had left the church and even the faith, right? Mm-hmm. And I went, man, what's going on? And started to explore that topic more. And then the book eventually resulted from that. I think that's wise. I don't know if it's something I've done intentionally, but instead of kind of going, hey, what's the hottest trend in publishing? I need to jump on that train. I do advise people to write from their own experience. Of course, that's like the oldest truism in writing. But to think about what's been impacting them personally and then trying to – because I really do believe, especially with nonfiction books, right, you're always – your first reader is yourself. You're always writing to yourself. And if you aren't, it's going to feel forced and inauthentic. And so you really do have to, yeah, look around at the culture, what's happening in the church, but write from your own frustrations and challenges.
Yeah. Otherwise, sometimes we talk about that as this process of finding your voice, which doesn't just mean what vocabulary words do I use, but finding your voice means you could 2, 3, 4 people could write on some of these same trends they're seeing. But if you're writing out of your experience, out of your perspective, out of how you've really lived this thing, then that's where the voice component comes through. It starts to sound like you actually engaging with this thing versus some sort of sterile, identityless, or maybe worse, some sort of cheap imitation or copy of somebody else engaging with it. But everybody comes to the writing from a little bit of a different place. Some people really lean into the write what you know advice, and unless it's something they're an expert in, you know, they're not going to go there. Other people tend to write really sort of self-exploring and really trying to come to terms with who they are and how they're engaging this thing. And I hear you finding this sort of interesting middle place that says a lot of what motivates me to write is seeing things around me, recognizing things happening in culture. But then that always turns back into a question for you of why is it happening? What are the implications for me? How do I engage with this thing that I see happening? Would you say that's true?
Yeah. And I might even reverse the direction of that. I think at least for me, I kind of go, what am I dealing with and what am I frustrated by right now? And then I kind of look at the broader picture and go, how does this relate to what's going on around me? And I do believe, I mean, we've all read those books where they're very navel-gazing. Someone's just kind of sitting there, you know, talking about all their struggles or, you know, introspective thoughts. And it gets pretty old pretty fast. So yourself, you know, it's a great starting point, but then it has to at some point open up and address issues that other people care about and just be bigger than yourself. But I think that naturally happens usually. Because, you know, you'll usually find you think, oh, I'm the only one who's dealt with this a big explosion in my church, like a big fight in my church or mental illness or, you know, financial challenges, whatever the topic is, right? Of course, it's something that affects you. And then you find that there are thousands or even millions of other people that have been down the same road. So I think it's pretty easy eventually to make that connection between your experience and a broader trend.
Our faith perspective too, I think, helps pull us out of that a little bit, right? Like we always recognize God is doing something in us, but then hopefully like that pulls us into this bigger story, this bigger narrative of what God's doing. But one of the things that strikes me is you're doing this on a lot of different levels. It's not like, you know, I've got my day job that has nothing to do with thinking and writing. And then when I get home, I put the work into this singular thing. I mean, you're juggling and engaging with all sorts of questions and thoughts from your acquisitions work to your editorial work to your own personal writing. Really tangibly, is there a way that you track things you're interested in writing about, thoughts you have that maybe someday are going to flesh out into an article, or even things that you recognize are beginning to take shape into maybe a full book?
I don't really have a systematic way of doing that. One thing that I've found, though, as far as like identifying good topics that's been invaluable are just real life conversations with people that are in the trenches of ministry, that are pastors, you know, because I'm one step removed, right? I'm not a pastor. I'm the support staff. I feel like, and I'm honored to be so, you know, I'm kind of in the background, helping resource the church. That's how I see my role. But there's no, alternative. There's no better way to kind of get your finger on the pulse of what's going on in the church, at least, than sitting down and talking to pastors. Recently, I was talking to a few pastors here in Portland and, you know, one of them lifted up his phone and said, "This is the biggest obstacle to discipleship in our church." And he wasn't talking just about his phone, of course, but all the congregants. He has all these 20-somethings in his church. And it's just become a really big issue that they can't really engage in true community, constantly distracted, that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden the light bulb went off and I'm like, wow, okay, that's a real challenge in the church. And it's one unique to our time, right? Where you have all these distracting digital devices, that are a real obstacle to discipleship. And so, you know, just those kind of conversations, all kinds of things bubble up that you go, okay, maybe there's something to that. And of course, you know, there's social media too, which has its place. You can definitely survey the landscape that way. Although that certainly has its limitations as well. I think it's really important, not only for people like me that are in editorial positions that are looking for topics that need to be addressed, but if you are a pastor and you feel called to writing, to meet with colleagues and have these conversations and see what kind of what comes up.
It's good advice. You mentioned before this kind of idealized image of a writer like in the woods somewhere producing these books. I'm finding it to be more and more true that anything that gets published ends up inevitably being a team project, right? There's editors that get involved. There's publishers that get involved. Even if you're publishing on a blog somewhere, there's readers, there's comments, it is never as simple as you and the words that you're putting down on a piece of paper. And I think it's wise. This advice is good that the more people I bring into that project, it's not that it dilutes it, but it strengthens it. It clarifies what it is I'm working on.
Oh man, that is so true. And I'll tell you what, the number one sign of a novice when it comes to writing is resistance to that collaborative process. I see it all the time. It's like, you know, someone gives me an article or a chapter or something like that, and you try to make some changes and you're making it better. You know, you're making it better. And they're like, no, you're killing my masterpiece. And it's not that they're like a jerk necessarily, but they just haven't done this enough to have that sort of pragmatic approach that, hey, listen, whatever works, right? And I understand that's hard because you get really attached to your words, but 99% of the time, getting editors involved, getting a team that helps you title the book and designs the cover, all that stuff, the book is immeasurably better for it. It really is a collaborative process, and I've really come to appreciate that, both as an editor and as a writer. The idealized version, I think, is just someone delivering this final masterpiece to a publisher who then just prints it. But trust me, if that was the process, a lot of your favorite books would be unreadable. and so, yeah, I'd encourage people to be open to that process, invite it, because it makes your final product a lot better.
Well, and even some of the people that give shape to those idealized images, you know, there's whole articles, books written on Fitzgerald, for instance, and his relationship with his editor and just how much work went into shaping some of those novels, and really interesting to go read. But it's why I give the advice, only because it's been true for myself as well, as early in the process, before you go down this road of pitching people and trying to imagining the next step is publishing, save up a little money, hire a freelance editor, and start like learning that process, what it feels like to get that feedback, what it looks like to then work back through it, level that skill up. Because I know for me, probably nothing has improved my writing more than just getting objective feedback from a professional who knows what they're doing and learning through it, you know, actually sitting down. And I tell you what, one of the things I do with freelance editors too is I'll normally say, hey, when you're done with this transcript, I also want to do a call and just talk broadly about what are the things you see that I should be improving or working on. And they always will tell me, oh, I'd love to do that. Nobody ever asks for that. But here's a person who's gone word by word through what you've written. I want as much information from them about improving as possible. And I think it goes back to what we've been saying, that sometimes when there's just this image of wanting to be a writer, it sort of keeps us from being able to be vulnerable enough to admit that maybe that image is not fully there yet, and maybe there's more things I'm needing to learn as a part of this collaborative process.
Yeah, so true. And I mean, getting feedback from someone who's a professional that really knows what they're doing as far as editing is great. But even if you can't get that, and it's just like your buddy, or I mean, you want to get thoughtful people, right? But
yeah, getting people who enjoy reading.
Yeah, but people that are in the target market for the book that you're writing. So if it's the kind of lay Christian, you know, getting someone in your church to read it. But yeah, who is interested? Not someone who's never read a book or something, but who's a reader. That's invaluable. And you can even just be like, hey, circle the parts you don't like. I mean, you know, it's like they don't have to diagnose exactly what's wrong, but just to see what works and doesn't work. That's huge.
Yeah, that's been big for me too. Just, you know, and your advice again, good. Just, you know, hey, I'm not looking for you to fix the commas. Just underline stuff that seems confusing and underline stuff that you think is interesting. Like, I'm just curious to see how your mind's processing what you're reading.
Yeah. Yeah. You always find out interesting things. You're like, whoa, I didn't even know that was controversial. I said there, or, you know, I thought that was so fascinating, but they thought it was kind of cliche or whatever. Yeah, it's of course a little uncomfortable, but if you're really interested in ultimately reaching people, and changing people, through your writing, you will put up with that, the process, and that's part of the process.
Some really good advice there. Obviously, this is kind of at the center of what you do, is working and developing these authors through this process. As you think about maybe a young minister who's listening, maybe even as we've described, known there's part of their calling is writing, something that they're interested in doing. I think always it includes the impact of books, the things they've read have had on their life and ministry, and they're thinking maybe this is something God's moving them towards. What's some of the advice you would give to a person trying to develop that calling?
Yeah, well, first of all, stick with it. It's important. I really believe that. We're in a funny time where we're undergoing a revolution in communication technologies, and so the image is replacing the word and all that stuff. At the same time, I still believe that God's changing people through the medium of the written word. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe that. So stick with it. I think we'll always have a place for a need for good writing that conveys God's truth in ways that people can understand. So stick with it. The other thing I'd say, especially young writers, this is an issue that comes up a lot with a lot of young writers that pitch me book ideas, right? So they will often have, they'll swing for the fences right off the bat. They're like, I want to write a book called The Theology of the Church. And I'm like, whoa, okay, you're 27 years old, right? You're fresh out of seminary, or maybe you're in seminary still, and you want to write a book on some sort of grand topic. And that's fine, right? I'm not saying you can't. But the problem is when you try to do something like that, you're going toe to toe with, you know, N.T. Wright and these, you know, heavyweight theologians that have huge platforms and recognition, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the books that people want to write right out of the gate are probably the books that they should write at the end of a long, fruitful career in ministry or academia. So that's one kind of misstep I see people making, and that's where you have to kind of go back to your experience and go, what uniquely qualifies me to write on this topic? How can I incorporate my story, what I've been through, and use that as sort of an access point into a bigger topic, rather than just trying to write this kind of third person, kind of a, you know, detached manifesto about a big topic. so that's a tendency I see with a lot of young pastors, and that's maybe just a little bit of idealism. But you really will have better luck if you kind of own your own perspective and write from that.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of a long-term, short-term perspective, you know? I mean, something like that may be on a guy's heart, and you're right, that may be sort of the culmination of a career. But probably the better question is, what is my first step into that career to get that ball rolling that, hey, maybe someday does accumulate to that point?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it just starts out with tackling topics that are a little more modest, and ones that somehow you're uniquely qualified to write about, you know. And it's the same thing with practical topics. Like, you know, I'll get, you know, proposals from a guy who's, I want to write a book about biblical preaching. And I go, well, okay. And I hate the dirty P word platform, right? But why is a pastor going to read you on preaching versus Tim Keller, right? That's hard. And unless you're known as a preacher, and this is one of the problems, but it's just a reality in the church resources market, and that is, it's very aspirational, right? You often have people reading books because they want to be like that pastor or have a ministry that is like that person's, and so I'll read the books that guy puts out. And I say guy because it's usually a guy, right? And so anyway, I will get into that more. You know, I think I wish it wasn't quite like that. And I don't like that model of kind of going to the latest guy whose church has exploded and going, hey, we want a book from you. And, you know, we will, you know, even if you're not a writer, we're going to help you get a book. We just don't play that game. But at the same time, those are realities that you have to think about as an author, to go, hey, if I'm not Tim Keller, maybe I'm not going to try to write the next big book on preaching, at least not at this stage of my career.
To your point about trying to find your own angle, your own experience in it too, you're right. But I might really be interested in reading a book from a well-spoken, well-written, thoughtful, average everyday pastor writing about his own personal struggles with trying to preach like Tim Keller and learning to find his own voice in the process, which can be a book all about preaching, but manage to do it in such a way that it doesn't demand you compete. But again, the key is that what you've been describing, this willingness to be honest and vulnerable. And if that's coming from you trying to have the platform or be like some great preacher, it's not coming from that genuine life experience, vulnerable place of who you really are.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great example. I mean, I don't know if that's a book or not, but yeah, if someone was like, hey, listen, you know, Confessions of a Podcast Sermon Listener, I don't know, bad title, but you know, it's like, oh, I tried to emulate all these guys, and I've heard that before. I've been listening to some 20-something preacher, and all of a sudden I'm like, that's Rob Bell, or that's Matt Chandler, or whatever. You know, and you can see that they're trying to emulate their style, and it doesn't work, of course, the same way as when the original preacher does it. Anyway, and so, yeah, and then it really becomes a book about voice and self-doubt and calling, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. And maybe learning to embrace who you are as a preacher versus this battle of competing and comparing. Yeah, I mean, I think there's something really compelling to that is a book about preaching, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's a unique angle into it rather than just going, I'm going to write this big tome on how everyone should preach. You know? That's a great example. That's an example of owning your perspective and writing from it.
Well, really helpful advice. Drew, we'll make sure and include links so people can follow you. I always appreciate the work you do, your writing, but also just the articles you write. So I want to make sure people are able to follow you. Mind sharing a little bit anything you're working on right now, anything in the works to come?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually finishing up a book right now. I'm already a couple days past my deadline. Don't tell anyone.
The editors, you know, those editors don't like it when you do that. Yeah.
I know, right? And it's like I'm hounding people to get their books in, and here I'm late with mine. Anyway, but yeah, I'm writing a book about self-control. Another very sexy topic. and yet it's been an interesting journey because I'm trying to look at it both from the biblical perspective and looking at all the science on willpower and self-regulation. And kind of bringing those together. So it's been an interesting journey. It's especially with the backdrop of all the public sex scandals going on and the high profile moral failings, right? And just realizing, hey, this is an important topic. It's often one we don't like to talk about. We'd rather look at, you know, self-expression and other sorts of things that are more celebrated in our time. But I think self-control is important. And so I'm excited about it.
Yeah, sounds like a good one. So where can people follow you if they want to make sure between now and then what you're writing, but also when that book comes out, they can keep up with what you're doing?
Well, you know, I spend way too much time on Twitter, so that's a good way to get a hold of me. It's just my Twitter handle is my name, last name, D-Y-C-K, Drew Dick. And then my website too, again, just my name, drewdick.com, is a great way to connect with me. Or if you're in the area, you know, in Portland or Vancouver, stop by and we can grab a coffee.
Sounds like a good plan. I might have to take you up on it one of these days. So
please do.
Well, Drew, thanks for being on the podcast. Thanks for opening up and sharing some really good advice. I know people will appreciate.
Oh, I hope so. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. As always, you can find links to Drew's books as well as his website by visiting the show notes for this episode. You'll find them at pastorwriter.com/15. I'd also appreciate it if you're enjoying the podcast, maybe tell a friend or a colleague, someone you work with, about the show. One of the best ways to help the show grow is word of mouth. So your participation in sharing it online, sharing it with friends, is one of the ways that helps make this podcast successful and helps me continue to bring great guests like Drew on the podcast in the future. As always, thanks for listening. Until next time.